and welcome to Magic by Design. If this is your first time listening, first of all, welcome. It's great to have you with us. Magic by Design is a podcast in which we are aiming to watch and review every Disney animated feature film. Each and every week, we break down a movie from the Disney canon in an attempt to discover the secrets behind the magic. We watched Disney's 22nd animated feature this week, The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, an exuberant introduction to the famous characters of the Hundred Acre Wood. But before we embrace our inner Christopher Robbins, allow me to introduce myself. I'm Ken, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host slash brother, Garrett. He's indifferent to honey, but he also loves poo. How are you, Garrett?
Mostly I'm indifferent to your dog named honey. Never mind the actual foodstuff named honey.
It's spelled differently, Garrett. This is spelled H-U-N-N-Y, and honey is spelled traditionally.
Well, I am a boy of very little brain, so.
Good callback.
Yeah, poo. I love poo. I freaking love poo. Poo is, like, legitimately one of my favorite fictional characters. Like, very good for a podcast medium, but within a shot of the microphone, we have a special pumpkin poo.
Yes, won him at a fairground, I believe.
No, it was in Alton Towers.
Oh, yes. Well, they have like a fair version where you win prizes for playing games, right?
So yeah, we were there in like August, September 2011. It was during the Rugby World Cup, which is the reason I more or less remember the date. And yeah, we won pumpkin poo in a claw machine. We put many pounds into that claw machine to get this pumpkin poo. I'm sure we'll tweet a picture of him at one stage or another. Poo is here. He's a special guest. Just like we had Donald Duck on the podcast, we have pumpkin poo on the podcast. He's also very happy that he's on the podcast in late September, which means he's more or less in season.
Yeah, he's coming to his time now, isn't he?
He gets very upset because obviously he's poo dressed as a pumpkin, which is very adorable. But obviously after Halloween, he's very unseasonal. So he gets very depressed. He has very severe seasonal depression, which is like 11 out of 12 months of the year. He is seasonally depressed.
Well, pumpkins last a while after Halloween, but then if you leave them on your porch, they start to go.
They rot.
Yeah. Just this like poo does not rot.
This poo does not rot. He is delightful and wholesome. But yes, I love poo. I love poo so much. Like, there used to be a recurring bit where when I was in secondary school, I don't know why. Actually, it's probably because of Kingdom Hearts, which we'll probably talk about later more. But the Winnie the Pooh song, which is Winnie the Pooh, duh, Winnie the Pooh, duh. And somehow it became a bit where I would sing Winnie the Pooh and say duh at like the top of my lungs. So, like, I'm going to do it and you're probably going to have to edit it out. Or it's like, duh! It's like literally that loud. Look at that spike at the audio. Horrible.
That's not great for a podcast.
It's really terrible. So I'll leave you with the horrible dilemma of what to do with that. But and then people would say Winnie the Pooh to me and I would respond duh. And I don't remember why that happened, but it was a thing that carried through most of my time in secondary school, which is the reason Pooh is of course a very important part of my life. I have the Pooh book, which I haven't actually read, but I have it in my hands.
I remember you got that one Christmas. It's really nice. It's a really nice bound version of it.
Like the premise of this film is basically that it's a storybook being told through animation. So they reference the pages. It's very meta. We'll again talk about more of that. And you see the animation taking place on the page. It's basically this book. Yeah. It's pretty much this book come to life. As you see the animations and you see the poos. And I haven't actually read it. You have Eeyore has a birthday. You have expotition. I love the misspellings in the poo world to the North Pole. Surrounded by water. Poo at house corner. Poo builds a house. Eeyore joins the game. All the fun poo stories in Enchanted Place. So yeah, I have this wonderful book. It's a nice hardback, classic looking book, an old school looking book, but wonderfully illustrated and animated and put together, and it has a collection of the poems at the back as well.
So yeah.
Pooh, who doesn't love Pooh? He's like the most delightful, wholesome, honest character who's just like, I'm a bear of very little brain. He's like, that's the thing he says, and he embraces it. He understands he's a bear of very little brain.
We're all bears of little brain. Yes. So he's very relatable. I think he's universally loved, and I actually think it's impossible to hate him. And if I found anyone that hated him, I think they're a psychopath.
Yes. Like, really, Pooh is one of the best, most wholesome characters. I did put you on the spot yesterday and asked you who would you prefer, Pooh or Paddington, and you chose Paddington.
Well, based on recent adaptations, in fairness, Gare.
Yeah, I'm still more of a Pooh guy, but those Paddington films are the best.
Paddington 2 is legit one of the greatest films of all time.
It's a masterpiece. It's 100% a masterpiece. If you don't cry, we won't spoil it, but if you don't cry at the end of Paddington 2, I question your humanity. It's again, one of the best films of all
again,
time.
You're a sociopath.
Like, the very first thing I did this year at 12:01 on January 1st was watch Paddington 2, and then look what happened to the year. It's all gone downhill. My year peaked within the first 2 hours.
I spent a long time trying to get you to watch that movie, and you're like, I'll get around to it. Like, Gary, you don't understand.
you have to watch it. Because we went to see Paddington in the cinema, didn't we, the first one?
And then,
which is also a delight.
I remember on January 1st, I got that a DM from you on Twitter going, it's perfect.
It is. It's perfect. It's like one of the best films. And it feels ridiculous to say Paddington 2 is one of the best films ever made. It legitimately is. It's one of the funniest, the most heartwarming, charming, well-written films you will ever see in your life. And it is like legitimately well written. Everything pays off, everything has meaning, everything has purpose, all the jokes land. Paddington is adorable and delightful, and you will cry at the end. Guaranteed. And even the stunts and capers and heists and all that stuff works. It's one of the best films of all time.
It's done a lot with practical effects, which I appreciate. And the cinematography is a very Wes Anderson kind of vibe as well. So, and the colors and the set dressing and the artistic direction. So it actually is a really great example of filmmaking.
It's perfect. It's borderline perfect. And all the famous bears. There's Rupert the Bear. Remember Rupert?
Yeah.
I didn't like Rupert.
No, I found him a bit creepy.
He's a bit of a creep. What other famous bears are there? The Yogi Bear?
Yeah, Baloo, who we talked about recently.
Baloo, pretty good bear.
I think bears are very popular because obviously teddy bears are some of the first toys any kid gets.
So we all rebuild our imagination around teddies and bears. What animal did I say there was no good films based around?
Oh God, what was that? It
wasn't an elephant.
Cats.
Cats, yes, there are no good cat films. There are many good bear films. Many. And this is one of them, to get you back on track.
Get me back
after
on track.
My deranged tangent, as I'm like, can Tigger do it? And he squeaked out, I'm coming, Christopher Robin. And he jumped straight into the middle of the tunic. See, I'm just going to read random. I'm going to put it down because I need to look at my notes from the show. But otherwise, I just read random pooisms because pooisms are so good. You dropped out Expooberant. I'm a big fan of Christopher Robin, that remake. Because again, we're not even going to talk about this film. We're just going to talk about Winnie the Pooh the entire time.
The funny thing about Christopher Robin, I know it's taken from the books and this film is based on the books, but a lot of the beats of this film are contained within Christopher Robin, the film.
And there's callbacks, which is like Christopher Robin, the film, is pretty much a sequel. Like this film ends, to skip right to the end, with Christopher Robin promising Pooh he'd never forget him. And then Christopher Robin begins basically with Pooh fulfilling that promise. Pooh never forgot him, but Christopher Robin forgot Pooh. And Christopher Robin forgets that childhood in his heart. People didn't like Christopher Robin because they thought it was like too serious and grim. And I'm like, it's easily the most interesting of the live action remakes, because it takes the world of Winnie the Pooh and does something interesting with them. It's like, what if this adult man has forgotten the childhood in his heart and he's been dragged down by the world around him and the cruel, horrible capitalistic business world, and he's just forgotten the wonder and joy and magic of the universe. And then Pooh comes back and he's like, hello, Christopher Robin. And Pooh is delightful and it's wonderful, and he's just like, they say nothing is impossible, but I do nothing every day. It's like, Pooh, it's so wonderful. Can I have a balloon? I would like a balloon. And it's like, people didn't like that. And I really don't get why people didn't like that film. Because it's like, you watch The Jungle Book, which I think is a well-made film, but it's a shot-for-shot remake of The Jungle Book. You watch The Lion King, which I don't think is a well-made film. I think it's Uncanny Valley creepy. But it's also shot-for-shot a remake of the film. Same with Aladdin, same with all these films. Like, they are HD remasters, and they serve literal no artistic purpose. None whatsoever, other than their corporate cash-ins on IP that Disney own. And so they like, let's get Will Smith to do Aladdin and everyone will be happy. As opposed to Winnie the Pooh or Christopher Robin, which actually took the spirit and core of Winnie the Pooh and said, how can we make this interesting? How can we evolve it? How can we expand on it? How can we actually do something new with it in live action, instead of just delivering the same thing you saw 15 years ago, except it has real people in it?
The temptation could have been just to reproduce this film in live action.
Yeah, you just get some teddy bear and the teddy bear qualities of Pooh, and there you go, job done.
And he says something along the lines of, who the bear?
Who the bear, yes. All the other classic catchphrases. And you put in a song. A kangaroo would have a song, because that's the way it works.
It would be a rapping.
Yeah, sure.
A rapping kangaroo.
Oh, no. Like, instead, they took what was good and interesting about it and expanded it and looked at it from a different angle, which is a much better way to approach those films instead of shot-for-shot remakes of the originals, which stinks.
Yeah, I'd push back on the notion that it's grim. It is grim in the beginning, but the whole point
serious.
Is
it's not grim.
The whole point is that it's serious, and it shows that his life has become a bit grim because he's forgotten his imagination and lost touch with his childhood. And it posits the theory, or even the message, that in order to be happy as an adult, you have to stay connected to those things, which I firmly believe. So it really resonated with me.
Yeah, it's a great film. You should watch Christopher Robin as we talk about all the other Pooh things. It's a really good film. Wasn't there it's not Christopher Robin, it's the boring one about Winnie the Pooh?
I think it's Goodbye Christopher Robin.
Goodbye Christopher Robin, which is a biopic about A.A. Milne.
I saw it. It's
we
okay.
We both saw it, yeah. It's okay. It's fine. It doesn't have...
That is grim.
That is quite grim, yes. That is serious. It's like, my child died of war, did he? I don't even remember the story.
No, he doesn't die. The basic story is that he wrote the story for his son, Christopher Robin, and then Christopher Robin becomes quite famous. Because,
and then resents it.
And then he resents the fact that, you know...
Then he goes to war to try and solve those feelings. Yeah. As one does.
To solve his daddy issues. So, yeah, it is quite grim.
Pooh has driven him to war. You, Pooh, you have driven somebody to war.
And then at the end, they have somewhat of a restrained British makeup.
Yeah, where it's like, I guess I forgive you, sort of.
I guess I'm sorry, but I'm not. Yeah. Let's stare off into the distance and not say anything to each other.
There you go. That's how good, healthy relationships work.
Anyway, that's another Pooh property, but we should probably talk about this one.
Yeah, but the 2011 film, which we can't talk about, yes, because we have to wait multiple episodes to talk about it.
About 30 episodes or so.
Is that the first sequel that we're going to talk about, as I think through?
Yeah, I think so.
I think, or is it a sequel? I suppose
it's a standalone sequel.
It operates in its own way. It's just another Winnie the Pooh film, as opposed to a sequel to this film. How do you quantify that? Is Frozen 2 the first Disney animated sequel? Surely not. The actual, like, not straight to DVD or any of that. As I try,
I'd have to think about that. I'm not going to say it on the air because I could be wrong.
I guess you have Fantasia 2000. That kind of counts.
That's a spiritual sequel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
It's interesting that
Wreck-It Ralph 2.
Which came for... No, Wreck-It-Ralph 2 hasn't come out yet.
It has.
Which came out first?
Wreck-It-Ralph 2.
Oh, I haven't seen it. That's
Ralph
the problem.
Ralph Breaks the Internet.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, you'll need to see it for this podcast, Gary.
I didn't love the first Wreck-It-Ralph. I know people did, but I was like, it's all right.
I liked it in the moment, but I don't know if I'd want to watch it over and over.
You will have to watch it over and over again. You'll have to watch it one more time.
Gary, let's get back on track, okay?
How else can I derail us on Pooh? There's the Tigger movie.
T-I-double-G-R.
The one of Flame Band of Tiggers. Or Tiggers are wonderful things. I don't like Tigger.
Yeah.
We'll get it. I don't like Tigger.
We'll get into it. I feel like I've seen some of the shorts, or at least the clips of them in isolation, but I've never sat down to watch the entire movie, despite my love of Pooh.
Mm. Neither have I, again. But clearly I'm a fake Pooh fan. Despite my deep love of Winnie the Pooh, I have not seen this seminal piece of Winnie the Pooh art. So I'm just a fake fan.
Fake fan.
I bought the book, but I haven't read the book. So it's like...
You're an aspirational Pooh fan.
Yes.
Walt Disney always intended to make a feature film of the Winnie the Pooh stories.
He better have, because he's the best.
Having been a fan of the book, more evidence of Walt's obsession with English literature.
It is weird, and like it really helps these films, because like the writing in those books are very good, and they're the backbone for the writing of these films, especially because this book is literally hung on the ideas. They're literally reading the storybook as it happens, so it really it helps add that kind of dry wit to these films that I don't think a lot of American culture generally has.
No, and they're obsessed with it even to this day.
Yeah.
A film went into production, but he decided to focus on shorts instead to introduce the characters to an American audience.
I've just realized we're 13 minutes into, probably slightly less after you edit it. I've exposed how much you're going to edit out of this podcast by saying how far into it we're currently recording. And we're only now getting around to, so we're going to talk about the film, I guess.
Yeah, because you got very excited.
I just ranted endlessly about Pooh. Look at him. Look at him, Ken. He's wearing a pumpkin.
It's understandable. I'll
take a picture of Pooh while I'm not listening to you doing the reading whatever is next.
The film is made up of three previously released animated featurettes Disney produced based on the Winnie the Pooh books by A.A. Milne. Winnie the Pooh and the Honey Tree, 1967. Winnie the Pooh and the Blustery Day, 1968, and Winnie the Pooh and Tigger 2, 1974.
It's interesting that like the animation style looks consistent.
Yeah, but I think it's...
You can kind of tell, but it looks consistent.
It's consistent enough, but I think it's because it's all in that kind of 1960s style.
And it does help, like, the storybook framing of this film, the way they animate it, you could call it cheap, but they contextualized it so it makes sense. So when there's, like, white in the sides of the frames that aren't animated, that's just the pages, because you're seeing literal moving illustrations is basically the premise of this. And I much prefer that, because if you're going to be cheap, at least be smart about how you're cheap, you know? At least contextualize your cheapness in a way that makes sense, and they do that.
Yeah, the artwork resembles the book illustrations, which makes it work. And the characters are given the Disney treatment, though, more rounded and cute. Pooh's now famous red t-shirt is a Disney creation as well. He doesn't have that in the book.
I do. I quite like that the characters are very teddy bearish, you know? Like, Pooh even rips his back open and sews it back up at one stage. But, like, they have a teddy bear quality. And maybe you might say it's cheapness in animation again, but another thing I really like is, like, when Christopher Robin is, like, holding the hand of a character and running with them, they don't generally animate the character, you know? Like, when he's holding Pooh and running with Pooh, Pooh is kind of, like, falling flat. Because Pooh's a teddy bear. Pooh is a figment of the imagination of Christopher Robin. So I kind of like that they don't overly, like, anthropomorphize Pooh. They don't turn them into like full animated creatures. They're teddy bears. They're teddy bears that a boy is playing with. And they don't lose that in the animation. It's all still there, and I quite like that.
It also firmly posits that the world is Christopher Robin's creation. So yes. The Hundred Acre Wood does exist. It does exist. It was near A. Milne's house.
It's where he plays.
It's where the real Christopher Robin played as a child. But the adventures and Pooh and everything is in his head. But
that deeply confused you, because there's the Mr. Sanders thing, which is never explained. And I don't think it's it's ever explained in Pooh. It's just literally the name that's above the door of his house, because that's probably like, that's a weird dumb thing a child would come up with, isn't it? And he lives in the house that used to belong to Mr. Sanders, and it has a very fancy sign above it, and Pooh never changes it because he's a bear of very little brain.
And who's Mr. Sanders? We don't know.
We don't know, and we never know, apparently. I looked that up. It's like, apparently no one knows who Mr. Sanders is. It's just the thing that's there.
And again, going to the live action adaptation, they start with that premise, but they actually shift into a different area where Pooh is actually real. So it's interesting. We see different levels of animation quality throughout the film. As you said, the shorts and connecting segments were made at different times. I think that, as you said, though, it was largely consistent, I thought.
Yeah, I didn't like, oh, that one looks a lot different than that.
I didn't
see
the seams.
It's like the character designs, they remain pretty. I like the animation quality, especially because they weren't pushing the boundaries of animation in the 70s. So like, the animation quality between the 50s and the 70s wasn't like dramatically different. If anything, like, Disney's animation in the 70s looks worse than Disney's animation in the 50s. So it's no shock that, like, you don't look at the three and go, oh god, the one from the 50s looks very old. Like, can you imagine if 2D animation now versus 2D animation in, say, 20 years ago, 2000? Like, you would know the difference. Or same with 3D animation, though if you watch Toy Story, it still holds up remarkably well.
But it does. If you watch them together, you can see the differences, but as a piece of art on its own, it does hold up very strongly.
If you literally just drop into Toy Story, it's like, that could have been made today, but when you watch the three of them, it's like, oh, look at all these small details and these background things.
There's four Toy Stories now,
guys. Oh, there is four Toy Stories, and I like the fourth one. It's not like
Are you a Toy Story 4 denier?
No, I'm not one of these people that's like, oh, they shouldn't have made it, because it's actually a really good film that has a worthwhile story. But yeah, it's that jump in animation between the 50s and the 70s is entirely unnoticeable.
We mentioned the moving storybook motif. I thought that was very charming and effective, because it gave a momentum to the story. It felt like, as I said earlier, you don't see the seams, so it passes through to different shorts.
Or you do see the seams in some cases.
You do, but it's intentional. That's
the seams of the book.
They riff on that, you know, and that's really funny. But you know they're different stories, but that makes sense because the books are different stories. They're the same characters. They might even call back to previous stories. But like, if I didn't know I was watching a compilation film, I wouldn't have copped it.
Yeah, and I quite like that they make a lot of jokes about the book. Like, when at one stage Pooh and Piglet are running from one page to the other, and they jump over the fold.
Yeah.
And Pooh is like, you're not in this book. Is it the gopher?
The gopher.
He's like, oh, bother, you're not even in this book. And he's upset at the gopher for showing up because he's not in the book.
And then throughout the rest of the film, they just, like, every time he shows up, they just quickly dispense with him.
Yeah, or like, at one stage, Owl is talking, and it's like, Owl talked all the way from page 45 to 62. And they just flick the pages. Though I will say that the cheapness of the animation, I will not accept, Ken. If you watch the pages flicking, sometimes it's just the same page flicking over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, there is full text on the pages. Like,
so if you're watching closely, I didn't notice that, but you would catch it if you're...
Yeah, if you're watching it, you'll see it's, like, it's the exact same. It's because they'll flick between, like, three or four or five pages, and you'll see it's the same page turning every time. And I caught that, Disney. Though I will appreciate the fact that they actually put the words on the page. It didn't, like, it would have been easier just to do, like, you know, the blurry text that you can't really read, so that they didn't actually have to, you know, literally type out every word that's being said and type out words that aren't being said and fill in the gaps. Which I love this storybook motif, because they've done the storybook idea a lot, you know,
and they've never fully realized it.
At the start of a lot of the recent films, we haven't mentioned it, but at the start of a lot of the recent films, like during the credits, there's a close-up of a book and a book opens and you're telling the story of the Aristocats or whatever the recent films we watch. I've already forgotten most of them. Robin Hood. Whereas this, it's like, it is the fully realized storybook motif. The book opens and you see the words on the page and you see the animations on the page and the animations come to life. It's literally like read. It's like literally what you see in your brain as you read. I think that's the idea.
And sometimes the words come out, you know, they in the movie, the words come out of you, they jumble up, they kind of, the characters bounce along the words and the songs and stuff like that.
Yeah, but I find that when the wind kicks in, that the words are being literally blown off the page.
Yeah, and I find that effect so fascinating, because as we talked about in recent films, they are cheaping out a bit, but that effect of the storybook and the words on the page and the turning page, that was created by hand, but it had a very almost photographic look to it.
Yeah.
Really good.
Ken is uncanny valued by this storybook. It's like, it's a real book, I swear!
For the character Piglet, hand gestures and other movements were used by the animators to create expressiveness. Same with Pooh, since he and Pooh had the appearance of dolls or stuffed animals with button eyes. So you can't rely on the face to convey the emotions, so you have to characterize them with their movements and their gestures, which I found...
And of course, most importantly, their voice.
Yes.
Sterling Holloway's Pooh. It's very good.
And he's been in a lot of these films, Garen, a lot of the shorts, but this is his main claim to fame.
Because he's never really played leads in any of those films either, though, has he? He's always been a side character. It's like, that's the Pooh voice as Ka shows up. And you're like, oh, Pooh! And that's happened multiple times in this film. And now it's finally the Pooh voice. And, like, I love Jim...
Cummings.
Cummings, yes, Jim Cummings' Pooh voice. It's so good. It's the Pooh voice. And of course, he's been the Pooh voice since, I think, 2000 officially. A little earlier, he did a little Pooh work, but he's been Pooh since 2000. So for most of my life, he has been Winnie the Pooh, and he's been so many of the other. If you look at the man's Wikipedia page, he has been all of the characters.
He's also Tigger.
Know? He's Tigger. He's Pete from all the other things. And if you look at his Wikipedia page, he's been in everything. Literally everything. Any animated feature or any animated television show, whether it's any Avengers show or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or any of that stuff, he's done a voice in it. Like, that man's CV is incredible. He's been in Pinky and the Brain. He's been in all of it. He's done this voices in everything. So it's just like, we have a character on a show this week. Get him in there. Jim Cummings, you do their voice.
What I love about Jim Cummings' performance of Pooh is that he inhabits the same place as Sterling Holloway, but he enhances it and brings it forward, and it has a different timbre and richness to it.
It is interesting. Like, Sterling Holloway is Winnie the Pooh. His voice is Winnie the Pooh, and it's still Winnie the Pooh. So that's like his, like, even though Sterling Holloway will be long forgotten, for as long as Winnie the Pooh is a character on television and film, as long as people are doing the Winnie the Pooh voice, they're doing a Sterling Holloway impression. That's what everybody is doing. So he will live forever in that way, or well, for as long as Winnie the Pooh is a character on film, which could be another 5 years for all we know.
Which I hope is forever.
Yes, Pooh should be around forever. Delightful bear.
Sticking on the voices for a second, Gary, Christopher Robin is voiced by three separate child actors in this film, which you do notice, but it makes sense because they're made at different times.
Because obviously the person who did the child voice in the 50s isn't going to be a child in the 70s anymore.
Well, it wasn't made in the 50s, it was made in the 60s.
But it's interesting, he gets more or less, I think the middle one he's least British, and the third one he's most British.
It's
and
like then
the
first like, one, it's like,
the first one's somewhere in between, then he's like, he sounds quite American in the second one, and then he goes back to being quite British in the third, which is quite funny.
Yeah, but like, if you're not paying attention for it, I was, because I read beforehand that this was the case. I don't think you notice it too much, maybe in the last one.
I think you bump on it. It's like, oh, that accent is kind of different, isn't it? I think you would notice.
You notice, but it doesn't take you out of it.
No, because who cares? It's one of those things. People are like, it's different. It's like, so what?
Moving on to the story and the themes, Gar, I believe featurettes was a strong initial approach to Pooh, because you can focus on one chapter or story at a time without having to decide what to cut, or conversely add the famous Disney filler. So if they were trying to make a movie of this book, it would be a mess, I think.
Yeah, I don't think Pooh is a character. Pooh isn't a character that has the depth to sustain a full movie. Actually, I say that, but Christopher Robin is an incredible film, so clearly Pooh is a character that has the depth to sustain an incredible film.
But it's still anchored to the book, though.
Yes, but like, Pooh is a simple character. He is a bear, very little brain. He is short, fat, proud of that. Pooh is like the original body positivity icon. He's just like, I eat my honey and I'm fat, get over it.
Yeah, I'll get as fat as I want, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, so go Pooh, go body positivity, even though he gets so fat he can't get out of a hole for one of these films, so he does have to literally wait until he loses weight, which is quite funny.
That's the whole premise of one of the stories, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah, but this film is 75 minutes long, which means roughly all the stories are about 25 minutes ish each, give or take, and I think that's about right for a Pooh story, without them outstaying their welcome, without the characters getting like overbearing or annoying, or without, like, as you said, unnecessary filler, without just turning one of these into it, like turning the one where Tigger gets lost into a 75 minute story would be very annoying. Instead, it's like a nice moral about how Tigger's a jerk and Rabbit's the good guy, but ultimately has to put up with people being jerks in the world, which I think is the moral of that story, right?
Yeah, Rabbit is trying to change Tigger,
yes,
rather than accepting him from who he is.
But Tigger trashes his garden. Let's not pretend like Tigger is some pillar of virtue here that's a good, decent character who does not need to change. Tigger is selfish. Tigger is obnoxious. Tigger has no concern for other people's property. But so Rabbit is in the wrong. Fair enough, Rabbit tries to have him get lost in the woods and die forever, which is probably an extreme response, let's be real. But Rabbit is in the right here. Rabbit is the good guy. And then everyone's like, oh, Tigger, you can stay bouncing and happy forever, right, Rabbit, who had just had his entire garden trashed by this menace? And then he's like, all right, fine, I guess. Poor Rabbit's bullied by the rest of these people and having a horrible existence. How do these people eat? But Rabbit has all his food stolen by Pooh in the first one, and Rabbit gets a hard time.
Rabbit actually brings a lot of the comedy to the film.
He's a persnickety.
Yeah, and he's a bit uptight, and he doesn't like things to change or not be the way he expects them to be.
But also, people exploit his good nature. Pooh is invited over for lunch. Rabbit is decent. Rabbit is honourable. Rabbit is fine. Rabbit does not want to invite Pooh. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
Rabbit does not want that.
He knows what's going to happen, Gary. Yeah,
but Rabbit is nonetheless, he has manners. So he's like, Pooh, would you like to come for lunch? And then Pooh eats all his honey and gets stuck at his door. And poor Rabbit, all the consequences of these fools ruining his life.
Pooh is a honey addict. He'll do anything for a taste, a smackerel.
Pooh's plot in the first story to get honey is my favorite thing, where he's covering himself in mud, grabbing a balloon, and he's trying to pose as a dark cloud to trick the bees into thinking he's a cloud so he can steal their honey. And then as he's floating in the air, like, that is a frankly ridiculous, brilliant plan that can only come from a bear of very little brain. And as he floats up, all the mud drops off and the bees attack him, and it all goes wrong. And that is utterly delightful. Another moment in this film when Pooh is floating down a river, like, his head's in a honey pot and he's just perfectly fine with it. He's not even like protesting. He's moving toward a waterfall. He's upside down, stuck in a honey pot, but I'm sure there's honey in there, so he's happy out.
Yeah, his main concern is getting the honey at the end of the pot.
That is wonderful. I love Pooh. I love Pooh so much.
I would push back on your analysis of Tigger a little
Tigger's
bit.
Tigger's a jerk!
He does learn his lesson in the end of his story, in fairness.
Does he? Tigger is like walking toxic masculinity. He's like, I'm great. I'm the best. I can climb this tree, then climbs the tree and gets stuck and causes everyone else problems. Tigger has to acknowledge that the wonderful thing about Tiggers is apparently that they're just jerks. And they have no self-reflection. Despite a song sung about himself, he cannot reflect upon himself and learn that the wonderful thing about Tiggers is Tigger should be conscious of other people. That's what the wonderful thing about Tiggers should be.
Interesting you say that, Gar, because that's the premise of the Tigger movie.
I haven't seen the Tigger movie.
The Tigger movie is somewhat of a standalone movie that's separate from this. It's not a sequel. It's a Tigger-centric movie in which he learns that he's not the only Tigger and he grows from it.
Good. He needs to do some growing. As I said, walking toxic masculinity. That's it. The Tigger has taught people all the wrong lessons in the world. Pooh is a self-conscious. It's like Pooh is like, I am fat and stupid. So Pooh is self-deprecating and self-aware. Pooh is aware that this is a book. Like Pooh knows everything that's going on. He's just a bear that wants to live with some honey, and maybe sometimes that honey addiction leads him to doing some unfortunate things, but he's good-natured as opposed to Tigger, who's just trash in the place and obnoxious and a jerk.
You finished?
Yes, maybe not.
A fourth shorter scene was added to bring the film to a close, originally made during the production of Blustery Day. The sequence was based around the final chapter of House at Pooh Corner, where Christopher Robin goes away to school. So like it's a very short sequence, but it's a little bow that was put on the film. And as you said, this is very much the plot of the 2018 film.
They even like they go to this bridge in that film.
Yeah, and
the bridge.
The dialogue is almost identical.
They make the promise. It pays off, because like that film, I think more than anything, is a sequel to this film.
I never thought about it that way, but that actually makes so much sense now, having seen this.
Yeah, and again, that's a worthwhile way of doing a live action it's not a remake, it's a live action sequel.
Also,
by the way, Ewan McGregor, not to cut you off, Ewan McGregor's really good in that film.
He was. He brings his gravitas to it as an actor, a very successful and good actor, but he leans into the silliness and he goes with it, and he doesn't, you get this feeling when actors do these films sometimes that they think that they're above it or they don't want to be a part of it, and then they stick out like a sore thumb because it's like John Cena in that movie Playing with Fire. Like, he doesn't give a shit about kids despite his public persona, so like he's just in it and it just feels like he's doing it for a paycheck, where he fully went into the whimsy and threw himself into it, and it really elevated the film as a result.
Yeah. Ewan McGregor rules. One of those actors that probably doesn't get enough love, but he's pretty much great in everything. He's the only good thing about the Star Wars prequel trilogy as well, so.
He's not too precious about himself. I like that. Okay, as I was about to say, Ruth Hill Vigors, who wrote A Critical History of Children's Literature during the 1960s, who mentioned Disney's Winnie the Pooh along with several other Disney adaptations as having destroyed the integrity of the original books.
I
push back on that.
I hate those people. Destroyed the integrity of the original books. Like, that is some elitist, obnoxious, gatekeeping nonsense. Like, stop it. Stop with your bullshit being like, destroy the integrity. You cannot like it. It's perfectly fair to not like it, you know? Or you can say, I don't think it's as good as the original books. All perfectly fine. But this idea that Disney walked in, Disney would have been alive during many of these. So Disney walked in and steamrolled over the Winnie the Pooh idea and took the heart and charm and soul and whimsy out of it. And all that's left is the corporate cynicism of the Disney Corporation. Desperately trying to leech children of another dollar. That's all that's left in these Winnie the Pooh exploits. The many adventures of Winnie the Pooh to leech children dry of every cent that they have. That's what this film title should have been, Ken. Like, that's these people need to stop and get a grip. Get a hold of yourself. And so you cannot like it. It's all perfectly fine to not like it, but destroyed the integrity. And almost like, another thing I hate is like, it ruined the original thing. It's like, the original thing is always there. This big old book that I can barely lift with one hand that I'm currently exerting. This is still here and it will be here forever. In fact, because it's in a physical copy, it will probably live longer, because you don't need a DVD player to play a copy of Winnie the Pooh. You can just lift the book. So as long as copies of those books exist, the stories of Pooh will exist. So go read them instead. This one quote from this person I don't know has me fired up.
It had me fired up as well, because I think it's quite faithful to the principles of it, and maybe some of the morals
have
are...
Have you read the books?
I've read some of the stories and the poems.
Okay. I have them all. They're right there. I haven't read them.
But like, it stays... The heart of it is still there, but maybe it's a bit Americanized, but obviously it's...
It's always going to be a bit Americanized.
It's made to appeal to American audiences.
It's made by Americans.
But I thought the spirit of it was still there. It's just bringing it forward for a visual medium.
Yes, to get out of here, to destroy the integrity. Nonsense.
We mentioned a while ago, Gard, the witty dialogue and narration. It's really simple and a clever use of language in keeping with Milne's prose. A lot of it, I imagine, was directly adapted from the book, because it's very snappy and very, very clever. And Milne was known for his love of using clever language.
Yeah, and clearly Disney could never write something that good.
Yeah.
As we've learned with Aristocats.
Yeah, they've stuck firmly to adaptations since then. Actually, Guy, you mentioned the scene with Rabbit when he's dealing with Pooh, who's stuck in his house. The idea of Pooh the Rump being part of the decor of his home was not in the original book, but was reportedly contemplated by Disney when he first read it. So he thought that would be a funny scene to add.
And which, it is. It's a nice little bit where Rabbit is trying to incorporate Pooh's butt. He's like, oh, I'll turn it into a painting. No, that doesn't work. Put a flower pot on it and it'll be a vase. And then Pooh sneezes and trashes it, and eventually he turns him into an armchair. Which, sure. I love how low stakes that plot is, by the way. Like, the plot of that first story is Pooh goes and eats a lot of honey and gets stuck in the house. And that's it. And they try to get him out and they can't. And the resolution is, Pooh, we must wait until you lose weight and then we will pull you out. And that's it.
And the gopher character is there. He was identical to the beaver in Lady and the Tramp. Down to the voice. The voice is the exact... It's the same person, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, even doing the whistly through the teeth voice that they seem to... It's like, oh, that's great. Let's do it again.
So he's a key part in the story. He initially tries to get Pooh out, but he can't. And then he shows up again at nighttime and Pooh's waiting there to try and be skinny enough to be pulled out. And the gopher has his lunch because he's on the night shift. And he's like, oh, just a little smackerel of honey. And Rabbit's like, nah. But the gopher, I think it's funny because he has a central part in this story. But like, as you said, they said, oh, you're not in the book. So throughout the rest of the story of the film, he keeps on showing up. But they keep on, like, literally the gag is they knock him down in his hole.
Yeah.
And he goes,
you are destroying the integrity of the original work, Gopher.
This film, coming on from that, it breaks the fourth wall constantly, and there's a lot of meta references. That's a bit ahead of its time in that kind of sense.
Yeah, it's very clever. It's a very clever film. And it uses, as I said, I really love how it does use that book motif. And it's like, at the end of the first story, Pooh is like, oh, I'm done, I'm happy out. And then the narrator is like, oh, but we must move on to another story. Pooh's like, what happens to me in it? And Pooh is intrigued, and Pooh must know.
And they talk about the book all the time, and they reference it, because it's like, they're in on this. They know that they're, like, if you think about it on a higher level, it's really interesting, because they know they're imaginary.
Yes.
And they know they're part of a book.
Yes.
But they're also alive. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
A couple of more notes here, Gar, on the story. Pooh's thoughtful spot, spelled thoughtful, means something entirely different in 2020.
It sure does. Pooh does something very different there these days in Pooh's thoughtful spot.
Yeah.
God damn it, Pooh.
I also wrote down Pooh's tummy is better than any GPS, because he finds his way out of the misty forest with his tummy, because he knows where his honey is.
Also, Pooh's clock goes off at the start, and he's like, oh, it's my Pooh clock.
Yes, I wrote that down here as well. That's in my notes. Yeah, and as I said, a lot of the stuff from this movie was used in the live action movie. One of the main things I'm taking away from this podcast is that it's a live action sequel, which really blows my mind.
Yeah, and it works better now that I've seen this film. Like, that last scene in this film, like, really, like, informs a lot of what happens in Christopher Robin, and that makes both films work better, which is the way those kind of things should work, Ken. It shouldn't just be, we'll sing the same song, da-da-da-da-da, everyone's happy, you know that one, right?
Yeah, playing the hits. The music of this film is delightful and cheery. They have almost a poetic approach to them, very much in line with the books.
Yeah, and like, the Winnie the Pooh song is great, as illustrated by the fact that it became a meme in my own life.
And we all know it, regardless of whether we've seen the film or not.
Like, you might not know the words, but you know, like, do 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 do. You know that off the top of your head. You know it. You recognize it. It's Pooh. And also, like, as much as I give about Tiggers, A Wonderful Thing About Tiggers is a great song. It's very catchy. It's very memorable. Most of the music, the Heffalump song, pretty good. Like, most of the music in this song. of this film is pretty solid.
In fact, the film is perhaps most remembered for the songs created for the main characters. All three shorts, as well as the future films, would contain at least the Winnie the Pooh and Tigger song. All of them were written by the Sherman Brothers, which their DNA is all over it.
It has their feel, doesn't it?
It's much better for it. I thought the score was one of the more noticeable and successful ones in recent films as well. It's built around the Winnie the Pooh song and the other main songs, and I felt like it drove and enhanced the story along with the songs. I thought that the score along with the songs gave a momentum that drove it forward and breezed from one section to the next.
It's the Sherman Brothers. They write good music, don't they?
Yeah.
They're good at the old songs there again.
Yeah, and you really did miss them in the most recent films where they weren't present.
Yeah. Is this their last film?
Yeah, they do some stuff for the Tigger movie.
Which, I suppose they might have already done some stuff for the Tigger movie.
Yeah.
I didn't know all those songs came, I thought the Tigger song came later, but yeah, they're all in this movie. As you said, the Pooh theme even predates this film.
Yeah, so they did this before they left the studio. Moving on to the final thoughts and legacy of this film. This, for me, is a real hidden gem in the Disney canon.
You gotta watch this film. This is, like, top tier. Legitimately. Maybe if you don't have the same affinity for Winnie the Pooh, you might not enjoy it quite as much, but nonetheless, it's top tier. It's very witty. It's very charming. It's very heartfelt. The songs are great. The animation looks good. The premise of the animation is even better. And, like, they turned cutting the corners of, like, not being able to... And, like, it's the best of the package films, Ken. They officially came good on the package films. They turned it into, like, this is what the package film should have been, like, based around a single idea. You have three different stories based around a single idea, packaged in a way that's interesting and authentic, not just like, alright, we have these three stories, we're gonna just cram them together.
As I said earlier, you really wouldn't notice it was a compilation or package movie if you didn't know, and it has everything that you'd want from a great Disney movie. They have lovable characters. I just loved being in this world, and I didn't want to leave. Like all great playtimes, you know, as a kid when you're having a great time, you just don't want to leave. As you know, like, our wonderful music and score gave life and momentum to the film. It's extremely witty and funny with some great set pieces of physical comedy. I can see why the characters have endured so strongly to this day and have a great place in the heart of Minions.
And there's not a dud character. That's the thing about Pooh. Like Owl and Rabbit and... actually, no, Tigger. There is a dud character. It's Tigger. Most people will probably disagree with
that. Well, at least has his own distinct personality.
Yeah, but you remember, you'll never forget Tigger. That's true. Piglet and Pooh, they're all like memorable, distinct characters. And Eeyore, of course. You can't forget them.
Eeyore is an allegory for depression, which is a very high concept for kids.
Yes, a character that is literally permanently depressed and unhappy at life, which is very relatable.
For many, Disney's Pooh is the only Pooh, and I think that's the biggest testament you can give to this film.
Is it? That they co-opted the character? That's the best thing about it?
Well, they co-opted the character. You could argue that, but the fact that they have created something that's permeated pop culture and remained relevant and beloved to this day based on an existing property and, you know, made it their own, I think that's something that is really commendable.
It's very good, Ken. And as the House of Pooh Corner ends, Ken, so they went off together. But wherever they go, whatever happens to them on the way, in that enchanted place on the top of the forest, a little boy and his bear will always be playing. And they'll always be playing in my heart as well. Pooh. As I grab the Winnie the Pumpkin Pooh and give him a hug to end our podcast as Ken goes into the plugs. Pooh is wonderful. Pooh is life.
You don't want to hear about the legacy of this film, Gar?
The legacy of this film is Pumpkin Pooh.
Okay, never mind then.
Well, we'll talk about the legacy of this film when we talk about Winnie the Pooh in 2011. We kind of already talked about the legacy of this film anyway with the first 15 minutes of this podcast, haven't we?
Yeah, we front-loaded it. So I think we'll save that for the next one.
We got to save something for the second Pooh. We blew our proverbial Pooh load.
Yeah.
Just,
Pooh and
a horrible image.
That's two different things.
Mixing my metaphors. But nonetheless.
Karen, just go back to the bit where you read the line and then I'll end the podcast because that was much better.
Okay. Do you want me to read the line again?
No, that's actually... We haven't got time, Gar.
Pooh promise you won't forget about me ever. Not even when I'm 100. Pooh thought for a little. How old shall I be then? 99. Pooh nodded.
Perfect. Oh, bother. That's nearly it for the show this week. Our resident Kanga Nicole is coming up in just a few moments with a song from the movie. It's always a treat, as sweet as honey, so be sure to stick around for that. I've heard it. It's really nice this week.
Oh, by the way, we're talking about the ruining the integrity of the book. Those lines I just read from this book are in that film, word for word. So get out of here, ruining the integrity of the book.
Get out of here, Ruth. You can find new episodes of Magic by Design every Monday, where all magical podcasts are downloaded. Check out our website at magicbydesign.buzzsprout.com. Pooh wouldn't like that website because it has bees. To find a full list of podcast providers there, you will also find all our previous episodes if you're feeling like revisiting an old favorite or catching up on some recent episodes.
Yes, we would recommend good films like Sleeping Beauty. or the Jungle Book, which is mostly good, except the part that isn't.
And, you know, Peter Pan.
Bambi's great.
Peter Pan's great, except for the racism.
Yes. Pooh has no racism. This is one of the rare films that doesn't need the may contain outdated cultural depictions list.
Well, Gary, you did comment that when he covered himself in mud that he was doing blackface.
Well, yes, we had to cancel Pooh. I'm sorry, Pooh, you have been cancelled.
Magic by Design is on all your favorite social media platforms. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/magicbydesignpod, on Twitter @magicdesignpod, and on Insta @magicbydesignpod. If you're a fan of the show, please do consider giving us a review on your podcast platform of choice. Share the podcast on your socials, or even recommend the show to a fellow Disney lover. We aren't as greedy as Pooh, though, so we just want a little smackerel of 5-star reviews.
Or all of them. Give us all the 5-star reviews in the world.
Yeah.
Every 5-star review Rabbit has, I want.
We will be back next week at the same time, same place, with Disney's 23rd animated feature, The Rescuers, from the same year. But until then, stay safe, and remember, when it's raining, friends are your silver lining, also from the book. Now then, I promised a treat if you were a good listener, and here it is. Nicole is here to sing us out with the title track, Winnie the Pooh, from The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. And deep in the 100-acre wood, she's also discovered some fun facts about the music of the film. Thanks for listening, and over to you, Nicole.
Hello, Disney lovers. It's me, your musical correspondent, Nicole, coming to you live from my bedroom. This week, we're going on an adventure with The Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh. All the songs of this feature were composed by the Sherman Brothers, and there are some bops, including Up, Down, Touch the Ground, and the personal anthem for Tigger, The Wonderful Thing About Tiggers. Many of the songs have been reused for subsequent films, reaffirming our love for this music. The score was completed by Buddy Baker, Shock Horror, No George Bruns, OMG. But it's okay, guys. Buddy and George were besties, so there's no hard feelings. Before this, Buddy worked on a lot of Disney comedy and fantasy dramas. This was his first contribution to an animated film. The first song I think of from my childhood when I hear Winnie the Pooh is the theme song. It was composed in 1966 for the featurette film Winnie the Pooh and the Honey Tree, and it has been used in many a film since then. It was also used as background music in the Kingdom Hearts series. The song is sung by the Disney Chorus. The dream job right there. What has a girl got to do to get that gig? Anyways, here's my version of Winnie the Pooh. I hope you enjoy it.
Deep in the 100-acre wood, where Christopher Robin lives, you'll find the enchanted neighborhood of Christopher's childhood days. A donkey named Eeyore is his friend, and Kanga and Little Roo. There's Rabbit and Piglet, and there's Owl, but most of all, Winnie the Pooh. Winnie the Pooh, Winnie the Pooh. Chubby little copy all stuffed with fluff. He's Winnie the Pooh, Winnie the Pooh. Willy-nilly silly old bear. Winnie the Pooh, Winnie the Pooh. Chubby little copy all stuffed with fluff. He's Winnie the Pooh, Winnie the Pooh. Willy-nilly silly old bear.